Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. Watch, chop, retrofit.
Alright, welcome back to Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are gonna happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs, like us, decide who is recast in those iconic roles? I'm a little bit rusty because we've been out of the shop for a couple weeks now. We're on a little bit of a hiatus. The listeners, the Cinema Chop Shoppers, would notice that the last two things that we put up were mini-sodes. We are back in the shop, back on our regular schedule, so be expecting full episodes on a pretty much weekly basis. We do have an online presence. We are at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. On Facebook, we are facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And then we are also cinemachopshop@gmail.com. My name is Travis, but for today you can call me Captain Howdy. And I will be your host. Captain Howdy is also the only term that I'll be using to refer to surprise boners. Captain Howdy! And I am joined, as always, here in the shop by our engineer, editor, producer extraordinaire, the Canadian in your brain again, it's Andrew Tay. Say hello to the listeners.
Hello, listeners.
And also, we're welcoming back a third triumphant return for your boy Mark, or as I'm going to be referring to him today, Markov the Beast. Markov the Beast. He's now a married man.
Thanks,
which is
Thanks.
Kind of the reason we did a couple of mini-sodes the past 2 weeks.
Wedding last weekend.
So how does it feel to be, you know, under the knife?
Is it more of like a
new nightmare, or is it like it's a dream warrior? Basically, what I want to know is, how does it feel to know that you're with the final girl?
The final girl? It's the dream of my life, Travis. It's really, I'm just walking on sunshine.
Living the dream.
Living the dream.
And we're also thrilled to have back on the show, for the fourth time, the Brew Boss himself. It's Sean of the Dead.
Nice. Thank you very much.
You guys don't mind that I went ahead and gave you nicknames.
I'm cool with that, yeah.
You're cool with it. Wonderful. But do please welcome yourself back to the show, and we welcome you, and we thank you for being here, both of you. A further description of the show is warranted now. You heard the tagline at the beginning. It says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We take older movies, sometimes classic films with iconic actors, and we retrofit them by tweaking them with new parts. And so for the record, we are not pro-remake. We're anti-remake, reboot, sequel-dependent culture that we're kind of immersed in at the moment. And so this show, all of these ideas are hypothetical. We're saying that we know the remakes are going to happen, so we're going to hypothetically decide who gets put in those roles. Real quickly, I have a couple of corrections from the Department of Corrections Department. There weren't any real major glaring mistakes in the 80s comedy minisode that aired last. Well, it was you and I, and we did so well.
It was
perfect. But I did make a couple of personal mistakes recently that I want to go ahead and correct here. During this past week, the Googe was staying over at our house, and he and I got in a kind of heated debate about the origins of Guns N' Roses. I said that Guns N' Roses formed between Tracy Guns and Axl Rose, and then Tracy Guns left to form LA Guns. That is not entirely true. LA Guns existed before Guns N' Roses, as did a different band that Axl Rose was the singer for, and I can't quite remember, was it Gypsy Rose or something like that? Something with Rose in the title. Then they did come together, form Guns N' Roses. Tracy Guns then left and had a band just called Guns. And now he's back doing L.A. Guns, getting that sweet, sweet comeback tour money. The name of his L.A. Guns album is called The Missing Piece. So I think he's making some allusions there. But he's probably going to be doing better than Axl, because, you know, Axl just flies
Axl
off
Rose,
the
yeah.
deep end.
It's a real hard time to be Axl Rose.
And then, so just to clear that up, Googe, you were right, I was wrong, because he's listening right now.
I'm sure he is.
And then also, at the reception for Mark's wedding and at the after party, I told everyone I could that our very generous driver, whose name was Jack, I told them that his last name was Smannikin. which I thought was a really funny joke that nobody got because apparently the band Jack's Mannequin is just too obscure. But sorry, Jack.
How are you
you did a really good job making sure that everybody stayed out of trouble. In terms of the theme of this episode, yesterday was Friday the 13th, right? And we are fully into the month of October. So yesterday was the scariest day of the scariest month. And so what better way to kick off the Halloween season than by doing an episode on classic horror movies?
Not romantic comedies?
It's not romantic comedies.
I've got to change my list here.
Right. The real quick, before we do the Midnight Double feature, I want to say some things about upcoming episodes. Next week, we're going to do an Asian horror-themed episode because it kind of ties in with the premise of the show. A lot of the horror movies that are coming out in the States are remakes of Korean or Japanese or Chinese horror films. And so I think there's a lot of material there to work with. Your lovely bride, Shasha, is going to be on the show for the first time that day.
What?
And she's really going to, I think, kind of drive the episode because she has a lot more knowledge of the material. But I'm going to be doing some research and watching some movies ahead of that also.
Good call.
Then a week and a half from now, on Wednesday of next week, we'll be doing a mini-sode, not next week, Wednesday after the Asian horror movies, the 25th, we'll be doing a mini-sode on location at a Halloween party that we host each year at my house. It's the 8th year that we've done this. We always show a double feature, and we will be discussing the two movies that will be shown that night and talking about recasting. And we've already got Sean said he's going to do it, McJunkin says he's going to do it, Hillary's going to be back, my lovely wife Michelle is going to be back for it, so it's going to be chaotic. But that's okay. It'll be fine. It's going to be a lot of fun. So before we do the Midnight Double feature, let's get that energy drink check-in, right? So because it is our first Halloween-themed episode, we had to go with the Monster energy drink. They're both zero calories, so there are different flavors.
Is that one pumpkin flavored? It's orange.
It's orange, but it's not pumpkin flavored. I wish. Brought to you by David S. Pumpkins. This is the Ultra Sunrise edition of Monster, and then also the Monster Energy Zero Ultra White. What's going on here? Ultra Sunrise and Zero Ultra are the two different cans. One's orange, one's white. Let's taste them. You guys have tried it already? Sean, you've tasted yours?
Yeah, that the Zero Ultra is kind of like, when I'm in a pinch, that's my go-to.
Yeah, me too. This is not bad, though. Really citrusy.
Oh, it's very
citrusy looking. Especially for having zero calories. But we would probably be remiss if we didn't mention a little bit of a conspiracy theory surrounding Monster Energy drinks. There's some people who have noticed that the claw marks that are their logo are very, very similar to the Hebrew numeral 6. And there are three of them next to each other. So that could be interpreted as 666, the mark of the beast,
yes.
a.k.a. the monster. So I think that that's another good tie-in for this Halloween episode.
I think people would just come out with it, honestly.
They would just say it, right?
666
Mark of the beast! Yeah, like, son of the devil!
Like, for sure, people would buy that.
So I don't really lend any credence to that conspiracy theory. I think it's probably just a coincidence, but maybe not. Maybe it was some kind of subliminal marketing, because it does, if you look it up, the symbol is remarkably similar to the Hebrew character or numeral for 6 there. All right, moving on. Enough of that. Let's talk Midnight Double Features. The Midnight Double Feature segment is one that I really enjoy. It's where we go around the panel and we each offer a suggested double billing, a double feature of movies in the selected genre. So today we're talking about classic horror films. I know that we throw that term around, classic and iconic, a lot, and it's really hard to say what qualifies as a classic era horror film. Mm-hmm. The ones that we're doing in the recast today, one of them's from the 70s, one of them's from the late 60s. Obviously, there's some much earlier horror films out there. You've got the whole Universal monster movies series from the 20s and 30s and beyond. You've also got early films like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and I Walked with a Zombie. But keeping that in mind, I kind of since the recast movies today are a little bit later, I went with some earlier films for my double feature. But do either of you want to go first?
Kick it off, Travis.
All right, I will kick it off. So the first, actually both movies that I picked are from 1931. The first is Dracula, starring Bela Lugosi, from 1931. It's got a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's considered to be a groundbreaking movie in terms of the cinematography and the special effects. It was directed by a guy named Todd Browning, who was a very prolific director. Didn't have as many horror film credits to his name as some other people, but he did a ton of movies. So yeah, that's my first one. It's a universal monster movie from 1931 starring Bela Lugosi, Dracula. And I am pairing that with another movie from the same year called Frankenstein. You guys have heard of that, right?
Frankenstein?
Frankenstein.
Tell me more about this Frankenstein.
Well, it was starring Boris Karloff, and it was also from 1931. And it was directed by a guy named James Whale, if I'm pronouncing that right, W-H-A-L-E. It's got a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It does not get any better than that. He went right along throughout the 30s with a bunch of these classic horror films. He did a movie called The Old Dark House in 1932, which I've never seen, but it's on a lot of people's lists of like some of the best horror films ever made. He also did The Invisible Man in 1933 and The Bride of Frankenstein in 1935. So those are going to be the two picks that I went with for my midnight double feature. Who's next?
Go ahead, Tron.
Okay.
This is where we actually figure out whether or not Mark and Sean are really the same person. They just interrupted each other, so there's no way they're the same person or that I'm performing their voices through ventriloquism.
Right.
Okay, so I went ahead and stuck with the mid-70s for my first
okay.
one.
Keeping it in the same ballpark time period as the recast movies.
As the recast.
Okay.
I'm going with Carrie.
Carrie, Stephen King's Carrie, directed by
Brian De Palma.
Brian De Palma, the great Brian De Palma.
It's got Sissy Spacek in the titular role.
Indeed.
And Amy Irving's in it. I believe John Travolta's in it.
He is.
And
he's a real asshole.
He is
it.
A jerk. Yeah. And it's a good flick. It's fun. It's a high school revenge film, and
it's
it hits the note. For my second, it's almost like a hybrid horror movie. It's sci-fi horror. 1982's The Thing.
Oh, okay. John Carpenter's The Thing, starring
Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley, and Keith David.
Not David Keith.
No,
Keith David.
Great movie, and it inspired so much in future horror movies as well as horror video games.
Mm-hmm.
The beasts sprouting out of other living things and things growing out of others.
Alien.
Just really. Bizarre,
it's a great movie.
Stuff. And it holds up.
The practical effects really make it hold
yep.
up.
And they did a kind of reboot / sequel to it a few years back, which was not bad.
It was supposed to be a continuation. Due to recuts and studio concerns, apparently they just scrapped that and basically made a remake.
Gotcha.
I understand.
And of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. The 1982 version was a remake of the 1951.
Ah, okay. So I think that in the remade, the most recent remake / reboot / sequel, they should have gotten Kurt Russell's son, Wyatt Russell, to play.
Is he an actor?
He is. He's in the recent hockey movie, Goon 2.
Oh, okay.
Andrew and Sean are both salivating over the words hockey.
I still have not seen that.
All right.
I saw the first one.
So we've got your double feature. We've got my double feature. Mark, what do you got?
That leaves me. So I went with much more modernness here, and I went with a Ty West double feature.
Okay.
The first one is the movie House of the Devil, which
so good.
Is from 2009, but it's a throwback to the 70s. Have you guys seen that?
I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. It's more or less kind of a mood piece, but mm-hmm. it's about a babysitter that goes to a house one night and kind of unknowingly falls into crazy goings-ons.
Lena Dunham has a cameo as the 911 operator.
Right, yeah. It's a great little kind of piece of atmosphere, you know. And
I love the director, Ty West. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of a modern auteur of horror cinema, but he also uses that throwback kind of nostalgic viewpoint. Like, he intentionally films in like a grainy style.
It was an actual on film, right? 16mm film.
And I think he does like late title cards and things like that.
Yeah, he's definitely going.
All right, so we've got House of the Devil by Ty West,
West double feature The Innkeepers.
The Innkeepers also really good.
Also,
the only name that I can remember from The Innkeepers is Kelly McGillis from Top Gun fame. Is she plays an older lesbian who has to come to the rescue of some people at a certain point.
And The Innkeepers, 79% Rotten Tomatoes, 86% for House of the Devil.
Both solid scores.
Very decent scores.
I love it. I love it. So I think that even though they are a couple of modern movies, the fact that he does kind of use that throwback style means that we can fully accept that as a double feature for classic horror movies. Great. You're still good. You're still good.
Man, I was worried about
this. So that will conclude the Midnight Double Feature segment, which will bring us to the first film in our main segment, The Recast. This is, as I mentioned, it's a film from the early 70s, 1973. It is directed by William Friedkin, has an 86% on Rotten Tomatoes, and of course I'm talking about The Exorcist. It's kind of sacrilege to talk about remaking The Exorcist, if you'll allow that expression, because it's such a solid film and holds up after so many years. Not to say that they have not cranked out sequels
and a TV series.
There was a TV series. Right. It was remade. It's actually currently in production on Fox.
And I have other one too, right?
Was there a different remake of The Exorcist for TV? Because I hear that the one on Fox right now is good, even though I haven't seen it. I thought about watching it ahead of this, but I thought that would kind of taint my decision making in terms of recasting the movie. It was based on a novel by William Peter Blatty, B-L-A-T-T-Y, and it also had no opening credits after the title card, which would go on to be a thing later, but in 1973, it was completely unheard of. And I wrote something down here that one of the commonalities that this movie has with the second feature we're going to talk about, we're not going to mention the name of it yet, but it's also been remade as a TV series. So, getting into the cast, we've got three roles that we are recasting. They're the three top billed people, even though there are some other characters who might warrant being mentioned. First, we've got Ellen Burstyn as Chris McNeil. That'll be the first one that we go around and say our picks for. And then we also have Max von Sydow at 45 at the time as Father Marin. And then Linda Blair as the young Reagan McNeil. She was 15 at the time, but she was playing 12. So let's go ahead, and I went first with my double feature. So, Sean, do you want to go first with recasting Chris McNeil, played by Ellen Burstyn?
Glad to. I'm going to go with Lizzie Kaplan.
Okay. Lizzie Kaplan is on Ray Donovan, is that right? Is she one of the hired...
Is she on Ray?
Hired guns on Ray Donovan?
No, she was Masters of Sex, Virginia Johnson. She was
also on briefly on True Blood.
She's been on The League. She's been on... She was on Party Down.
Okay, yeah.
And I like her a lot for this role. Big expressive eyes, very very pretty, but also she can play some really some heavy stuff. And there's some heavy stuff in this movie.
There really is.
Yeah, the mother's struggle with her non-religious nature versus what is obviously a religious matter. Mm-hmm. And so there's an internal conflict that needs to be portrayed. Uh-huh. I think she could pull it off.
And she eventually does kind of come around to believing that the situation is very supernatural and can't be solved with psychology or medicine or science. Also, I thought it was interesting that the character Chris McNeil is an actress, and so it's kind of a meta situation.
It was very meta.
And the movie itself is kind of self-aware. Almost like an homage to movies in general. There's the detective who keeps asking people if they want to go see a movie with him because his wife won't go anymore, and he always like makes up the names of the people who are in the movie. But I think it's really just an attempt for him to get information from people. So, Mark, who have you got for Chris McNeil?
So yeah, like we were saying, Chris McNeil starts out as a skeptic and ends it as more or less a true believer. You'd have to say. So for that, this actress walked the line between soul-crushing sadness and firm resolve. I chose Gillian Anderson.
Okay, as her mother. From the X-Files.
She's always played a skeptic.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And Hannibal most recently.
And she was also in Hannibal. Mm-hmm. She's done a ton of like more artistic work that she's not nearly as well known for because of the dominance and cultural significance of the X-Files. So Gillian Anderson, she's a redhead. She does have those expressive eyes. I think she's right in the right age range.
I think so.
There was a couple of other things that about the character. There was one point where Chris McNeil says, "You want me to take my daughter to a witch doctor? So that's what you mean?" And I think that was a real missed opportunity for them to get the rights to the song Witch Doctor. And so, like, the person she was talking to could have been like, ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah. And then they just have a musical segment right in the middle of The Exorcist.
Might break the mood.
Yeah, just a little bit, just a little bit. So anything else you want to mention about Gillian Anderson?
I think she plays a good skeptic.
Okay, guys, I hope you're ready for this because it's going to blow you away. My pick for the role of Chris McNeil, originally portrayed by Ellen Burstyn, is Michelle Williams. No, not Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child. Michelle Williams, the actress who was married to the late Heath Ledger. She was probably first noticed in Dawson's Creek, the TV series. Later, she did Shutter Island with Leonardo DiCaprio. She did My Week with Marilyn in 2011, Blue Valentine in 2010. She's a little bit younger than Ellen Burstyn was at the time. She's 37 now, but she looks a little bit older because she's got some emotional baggage that she's dealing with in real life. And that also carries across to some of her performances on screen. So, Michelle Williams in The Exorcist as Chris McNeil. No response whatsoever. You guys
what
are just like,
pick?
That is some bullshit, Travis. But can you see her in like, okay, so the way she was in Manchester by the Sea, do you remember her performance in there? Like really, really kind of downtrodden, emotionally damaged, still don't think she would be good as Chris McNeil.
Just not giving you any
knowledge. Nope. Okay, well, then we will move on. We will move on to the next character, which was Father Marin. Is it Marin or Marin? I think it's Father Marin, who was originally played by Max von Sydow. He was 45 at the time, but they aged him up big time.
Way older.
The character from the book was supposed to be 75 to 85. Mm-hmm. And Max von Sydow was only 45, but they aged him up to look like that. There's been some criticism of the makeup, but if you look at pictures of Max von Sydow now, he looks almost just like he did when he was 45 in that role. He's an amazing actor. He's done tons of things. He was nominated for Academy Awards twice, has never won. He was nominated for Best Actor for a movie called Pele the Conqueror. And he was also nominated for Best Supporting for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. He was also nominated for 2 Golden Globes. I don't have those titles. But he was in Dune. He was in
Dune.
He was one of the lieutenant guys. There's a picture of him on there. His first name was like Talon something.
Okay.
He was also in Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh,
yes. He's the guy at the beginning who Oscar Isaac's character is getting the stuff from. He was in one of my favorite movies of all time, a real crazy kind of mindfuck of a movie called Intacto.
Never heard of it.
It's about gambling with people's luck. So, like, basically you have captives based on their luck, and then you pit them against other captives, and you're wagering with their luck. It's really crazy. He was in Minority Report, and then most recently he is the Three-Eyed Raven on Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the previous Three-Eyed Raven. We're not going to spoil anything else about that.
Please,
So, Father Marin, Mark, you want to go first on this one?
Sure. I'm just going to go ahead and write out and say it. It's got to be Liam Neeson.
Okay, Liam Neeson.
As Father Marin, I think it just really works for that.
And yeah. I could hear him saying, "The power of Christ compels you."
Easily. He's fought the forces of darkness before.
That was a little bit Sean Connery.
Okay. Even though he might lose, he's willing to try to save an innocent soul. He's got the world-weary component, and it's his personality that really plays well to the Father Marin role, I think. Yeah,
so I like
Liam Neeson. It's just straight to the point. There's no build up for that. It's just Liam Neeson.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, then, keeping the rotation going, I will go next. I threw around a few different people for this. I thought about Hugo Weaving. Mm-hmm. I also thought about Sam Neill. And mm-hmm. I eventually settled on a guy named Scott Glenn. Scott Glenn is 76 now. The first thing I noticed him in was a movie called Silverado from 1985. He was also Clarice's boss in The Silence of the Lambs. He was in Backdraft. He was in Training Day.
Oh, he was in The Leftovers most recently.
The Leftovers, the TV show. Yes, that's him.
Okay.
And he was in W in 2008. He played Donald Rumsfeld. And he's currently in the in-production TV show Castle Rock, based on all the different Stephen King stories,
which is
supposed
Daredevil,
to be good.
Like,
yeah,
Hunt for Red October, Born
so
Legacy.
Scott Glenn, if you look at him now, at his face, he looks like he could be Father Marin in The Exorcist. Plus, he's just an amazing actor.
Mm.
All right.
Great.
Sean, what do you got?
I went for a gentleman who is 75. He's most recently been seen in American Gods. He was well known in Deadwood. I picked Ian McShane.
Yes.
Ian McShane's a good idea.
You know, that's funny that you mentioned him, because I thought that the other priest, Father Karras, looks like a young Ian McShane.
Exactly. Okay. But, you know, the great thing about that role is that he's seen shit.
Yes.
and it comes across
grizzled
in his performance. And like you'd said, world weary. Uh-huh. I think Ian McShane has the world weary.
Mm-hmm. I think
quality.
So.
Wonderful.
For sure.
Ian McShane. Okay, well, that brings us to the third and final official role that we're going to recast. It was the role of Regan McNeil, originally portrayed by Linda Blair, who was 15 at the time, as we mentioned, but she was playing a 12-year-old. So she was playing younger than her actual age, but she cussed like a fucking pirate. Mm-hmm. That's actually an understatement. She swore like somebody who was in prison for swearing too much.
Yes.
She wove a tapestry of profanity.
And the role even kind of had a toll on her, didn't it?
Yeah.
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 And it also, in the first act, I've seen the movie before, but I did rewatch it recently. But in the first act, I'm like, oh no, this girl is terrible. I can't even get into this. But then when when the possession starts to really become apparent, you're like, oh shit, she can act. Unfortunately, she kind of became typecast later in her career. She made the second Exorcist, and maybe she was even in the third one. She also made a couple of parodies of like possession movies. Not a whole lot else besides that.
Yeah, girls got to make a living.
Yeah, that's true. And also, this character kind of hit a little bit too close to home with me, because I have an ex-girlfriend named Regan, and so I did not have to require an exorcism to get out of that relationship. But it still is not the best memory. So Linda Blair, who's going first on this one? Is it back to me? No, I just went with Scott Glenn. So Sean, you're
first,
up.
Yeah. I'll go first. That's, you know, it's always tough casting young people.
Mm-hmm, it is.
But I went with somebody that jumped out at me for her looks, mostly, just because she looks haunted. Her name's Nikki Hahn. She's 15.
Okay.
She's got a long list of credits. Most recently, I think, in the Adventures in Babysitting.
Okay, the reboot of Adventures in Babysitting?
Yeah, there's a TV series called Genius through National Geographic.
I didn't know there was a reboot in Adventures in Babysitting.
Yep.
There shouldn't be.
Seems
unnecessary.
But she's had lots of parts, and, you know, it's just one of those things where...
She's actually 14, according to the Googles.
I'd say 15.
Well, it depends on what month and what day of the
anyway,
year she was
she
born
looks
in.
Cool.
Yeah,
she could
yeah,
be like
she could
Lizzie
do it.
Kaplan's daughter in my recap.
Uh-huh,
yes. Work. Yeah, that's a good pick.
Very
yeah.
much.
That's my pick.
So another point about the character of Regan McNeil. There's one point when she's doing some crazy shit and her mom takes her to a doctor, a psychologist, maybe it's just a medical doctor at the time, and he prescribes Ritalin to her in 1973. It's actually set a little bit earlier, I think. Oh, no, that's the other movie is set a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. But so in 1973, I didn't even know Ritalin existed then. As a child who was prescribed heavy doses of Ritalin, I will say that the doctor never said it was for hyperkinetic behavior, because that sounds awesome. It's probably not. It's probably not telekinetic. Probably not, it's probably just moving around a lot. So apparently they called it hyperkinetic behavior back then, and they were giving her Ritalin. And guess what? It didn't work to get the devil out of her.
Nope.
All right, Mark, who do you have for Reagan McNeil?
For Reagan McNeil, I have Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie Bobby Brown.
Or 11 from Stranger Things.
Oh, that's good.
It's a great
She's
choice.
Good. I thought about her, but I've used her before. Oh, and okay. we kind of have the unspoken rule where we're... the unspoken until now, Travis.
Yes.
That we're going to try as long as we can to not use the same. But I think that's on an individual basis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you could use somebody that I've used before.
I'm not keeping a list of your people.
Okay, well, I have the list if you want to see
it. Okay, right, maybe. Anyway, she's 13 years old, and yeah, she's done great things with that Stranger Things role, and I can't wait to see what she does next.
I can't wait to see the upcoming season 2 of Stranger Things. But she also...
isn't that like next week?
It's soon. It's really soon. Yeah. She also bears a very passing resemblance to Linda Blair, especially at the end of the movie when she's kind of in recovery mode, and her hair is a little bit shorter. I think that's an excellent choice. I like that casting a lot.
Thanks.
I'll go ahead and go. You mentioned that it's always difficult casting younger people. I thought about doing like an ethnic swap or even a gender swap on it. I thought about the kid from Morris in America or Hunt for the Wilder People. Mm. But instead, I just went kind of basic on it. I picked a little white girl who looks kind of like her. Her name's Maggie Elizabeth Jones.
I like her.
She's best known for the movie We Bought a Zoo, which I didn't realize was directed by Cameron Crowe. She's also in the movie Identity Thief and has a small role in the movie Footloose. But if you see her picture there, I think that she could definitely pull off that role. Any other thoughts on the, one bonus role. Let's talk about, Father Carras, who, had arguably a bigger role than Father Marin. He's the one who brought Father Marin back from the Middle East to, assist in the exorcism. And the original actor who played him was a guy named Jason Miller. And I went with a actor that I actually might have used before, now that I just said we weren't going to do that. But I went with Oscar Isaacs, who to me looks like kind of a young Ian McShane. He was in Star Wars The Force Awakens in that opening scene with Max von Sydow.
Inside
so they have
Llewyn
kind
Davis.
Of... He's also in Inside Llewyn Davis.
He looks different almost every role.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a chameleon.
Ex Machina also.
Yeah, great in Ex Machina. So yeah, I went with Oscar Isaacs. Do you guys have anybody you want to throw out for that role? I know this. I'm completely springing this on you at the last minute.
Yeah, that's a great... Can't really give a thoughtful answer.
It's fine. It's fine. That means I win. Here's the thing is, having just rewatched it last night, I realized that even though he wasn't in the top three in terms of villain, that his character was a little bit bigger role and needed some attention in the discussion. But it's completely fine if you guys don't have anybody
Jason
in mind.
Lee, I don't know.
Jake Johnson from the New Girl. The New Girl.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that makes sense.
He was also in Digging for Fire not too long ago.
That's right. I remember hearing
about
that movie.
So that is going to conclude the first movie for our recast segment. We are going to head into an intermission unless anybody has any... pressing points that they need to make. All right, and we will catch you guys after the intermission. All right, Cinema Chop Shoppers, that's what I'm calling you, at least for now. Welcome to the intermission here, the break during the show, where I just wanted to chime in and remind you to please rate and review us on iTunes. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the podcast. And you can also communicate with us online. We are cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And we are also on Twitter, @cinemachopshop on Twitter. And on Facebook, we are facebook.com/cinemachopshop. So please get in touch with us. Give us some recommendations for themes, perhaps, to themes or genres, subgenres of films to use for future episodes. And thank you for listening. No, we will do it live. Welcome back. Welcome back, Cinema Chop Shoppers from the intermission. Thank you for bearing with us, but we had to transition from our energy drink mode into our beer check-in mode. So we are going to go ahead and check in three very different beers. They are varying in terms of quality and flavor. We'll do the worst one first. Okay, let's just get that over with.
Sure.
I could not finish my sample pour of it because I had to pour it down the drain. It tastes like a mouthful of chalk, and you guys described it as kind of a cat urine flavor.
Ammonia,
yeah. It's called Death by Schmaltz Brewing Company. It's a black ale or a Cascadian dark ale. So they call it a hoppy black ale. I picked it because it says death on it, and it's got the sugar skull there, kind of fitting with our Halloween theme. I regret that decision at this point. You guys want to elaborate?
It's repulsive.
It's very bad.
It says here it has seven hops on it.
But yeah, how could they picked the wrong seven to combine, I guess, because that is not good. And usually the bar is not set very high for me to like a beer. Like I can pretty much handle about anything, but not this. This is quite bad.
Like next week is Miller Lite check-in.
Yes. just to cleanse our palate. So the other one, the next one, is a little bit better. It's from Trooper Brewing, created by Iron Maiden, and I picked it because it's got their mascot, the Trooper, on the cover there, and it's called Hallowed. It looks kind of spooky, and that's kind of what I'm going for the thematic connections.
It was a good beer. It was a Belgian style. Very nice.
Much better than Death by Schmaltz. Maybe they just meant it literally, like if you drink this, you will die.
7 days.
All right, and then the third beer that we're checking in is one that you brought, Sean. What is this?
It's from Trillium Brewing up in Massachusetts.
An actually good beer.
Yeah, Pot and Kettle, oatmeal porter with cold brewed coffee. And
The coffee flavor is pretty prominent.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a Java Crow from SeminarBrewing.com.
Yeah.
So those are going to be the three beers that we checked in. We told you about them in order of their deliciousness or lack thereof. And we will move it right along to everybody's favorite segment, the one that nobody gets frustrated with or is growing impatient with.
Yeah, wake me up when it's over.
It's my 2017 movie marathon. I check these in on Twitter. I've migrated all of the movie check-ins over to the Cinema Chop Shop Twitter feed, and I'm only going to tell you five because it's been 2 weeks since we've recorded a full-length episode. Therefore, it's been 2 weeks since I've told the listeners about my check-ins. I've got more than five checked in since then, but I'm just going to tell you about the most recent five movies. They are in order of most recent today, early this morning, at Marco of the Beast's recommendation.
Yes.
I watched The Babysitter on Netflix. It's a 2017 horror/horror comedy. Pretty heavy on the slash. It's kind of a gory movie. It stars Bella Thorne gets top billing, but she is not actually the main character. The main character is a woman named Samara Weaving, and she actually plays the titular babysitter. So it's about this kid who's a bullied kid who gets picked on and has a kind of his only friend is his older babysitter, who's just a bombshell, and he decides one night to stay up, to pretend to be asleep, but actually stay up to see what happens after he goes to bed and what babysitters really do. And he does that and finds out that it's way, way worse than he actually expected. Really messed up movie, but it was also pretty good. Directed by McGee, no less, making his triumphant return to film. He's been doing a lot of TV shows lately, but I'm going to go ahead and say that this is the best McGee creation.
What are some other McGee joints?
Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
This is the best since Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
But it has that kind of stylized, over-the-top action, very choreographed, a lot of the kind of video game feel. Like your
Evil Dead style?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. Also, there's something that he does in his movies where he likes to put words up on the screen.
Okay.
Kind of like like a Wes Anderson or a who's the Baby Driver guy most recently.
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright does that as well. Although I'm not saying that McGee is in a class with either of those guys. But it was a Halloween themed movie, which is good because we're in October. Before that, I watched A Ghost Story, which is another kind of October themed, Halloween themed movie, but it stars the Casey Affleck and Casey Affleck, and it's actually his first name is the, and then his first initial is K, second initial is C. It was also starring Rooney Mara, who was in the American version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. She's also got a sister who's an actress named Katie Mara, who was on House of Cards. So my assessment of this movie is it is a solid film. I haven't seen anything from A24 Productions that I haven't liked. They're really good.
They have been amazing.
But this is not a scary movie.
Yeah.
It's more of a sad movie.
Yeah.
Where it's really not that much of a spoiler, but one of our main characters passes away and then is a ghost for the entire remainder of the film. Literally walking around with a white sheet over his head and cut out eye holes. But it's really about how people carry on and move on after a loss.
Is there any like Enter the Void but less abstract?
No. Okay. It was pretty straightforward, like an emotional piece.
The way they kind of meditated on time and like lost and Enter the Void. It's kind of the vibes I got from Ghost Story, but obviously not that.
Okay. The next check-in, number 259, and I'm kind of doing it in backwards order, is a real horror of a movie. It was absolutely terrifying. It's called The Emoji Movie, which I think I previously stated on the podcast that I would not watch. But I did. It came out on home video, and I watched it. I think that my...
Hopped in a VHS.
Yeah. I have a VCR, guys. It's... My actual review was that there were some lulls, but it was mostly meh.
Mostly meh.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
One of the characters in the movie is named meh, because he's an emoji.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, and then before that, number 258, I watched the documentary Spielberg. It's on HBO Go.
And what's that
and
about?
It's all about the sales pitches that you get from icebergs. It's obviously a documentary about the... one of the best directors to come out of the new wave of American cinema, New Hollywood, along with, George Lucas and Martin Scorsese, Brian De Palma, all those guys. It's a documentary about Steven Spielberg. I liked it. It's a little long. I think it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes long. And I also saw some criticism online that it didn't go in depth enough, but I feel like it did. I mean, given 2.5 hours, you can get pretty far in depth. And then the last one I'm going to mention today is a movie we mentioned previously on the podcast that I was looking forward to called Marjorie Prime with John Hamm. And it's kind of a futuristic dystopian scenario with artificial intelligence and like holograms, and reminded me a lot of the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix, and also a lesser known movie called Operator with Martin Starr. So that concludes the 2017 Movie Marathon check-in. I will just say that I've seen 261 movies, and it is the 287th day of the year. I only have 104 movies to go, but I'm also 20...
days?
Well, what is 365 minus 287? It's 13 plus 65, which is 78?
78 sounds right.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, 78. It's okay. We don't need to do math on the podcast.
This is not a math podcast.
No fact checking. And we'll save that for the Department of Corrections department. Recast continue, guys.
Yes,
going with the second feature. This movie number 2 is from 1968. It currently has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby was directed by Roman Polanski. We don't want to get too far into the controversy about him, but he might know a thing or two about some of the thematic elements of this film, specifically misogyny, conspiracy, collusion, rape, and maybe Satan. We don't know.
There was a new accusation with him recently, wasn't there?
Oh, I'm sure. He's constantly embroiled in controversy ever since back in the day. But We said that it was filmed in 1968. It's actually his American debut. Prior to that, he'd only made European films. And it, even though it was filmed in 68, it was set in 66. And it was also remade for TV in 2014 with Zoe Saldana.
Ongoing, right?
Yeah, it's ongoing. I believe so. I believe it's ongoing. But that's something that it has in common with our other movie from the recast, that it was remade, adapted for television recently in the, you know, the new millennium. So it stars a few people, but the three that we're going to recast, once again, they're the top billed people in the movie. Rosemary Woodhouse, which was the role portrayed by Mia Farrow, who was 24 at the time. Also, Guy Woodhouse, her husband, John Cassavetes, who was 39 at the time. And then Minnie Castavet is the character portrayed by Ruth Gordon, who was 72 at the time. So it was kind of interesting that one of the main characters' last name was Castavet. Her husband's character's name was Roman Castavet. The director's name was Roman Polanski. And the lead male was John Cassavetes. So I think that he was making some very overt references, like, this character's supposed to be me. This character's supposed to be him. So the three roles, I'll go first, right, with sure. Mia Farrow.
Charge.
So I went with a actress who I thought could pull off the kind of frail, in danger, but also determined to find out, to get to the bottom of things. I went with Emma Watson. Emma Watson was Hermione in the Harry Potter series. She's 27 now. She's a few years older than Mia Farrow was at the time, but that's okay. She was also a couple years ago in a movie that Michelle picked for our Halloween party called Regression, about the Satanic Panic. So that kind of ties in with this as well. And she has recently cut her hair very short into a pixie bob. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at that picture of her and you look at Mia Farrow, you would have no argument with this whatsoever. Emma Watson.
Great.
She's my pick.
Nice. Okay, so I guess I'll jump in.
Okay.
this actress was in Brick and The Brothers Bloom, so she hasn't been anything in a little while.
Okay.
I chose, her name is Nora Zehetner. Basically, she looks a lot like her.
Yeah.
This kind of thing. Kind of has that pixie girl look, and I think it would work pretty well.
How old is she now?
That's a great question. Research will destroy this podcast.
That's true. I'm just looking at her. Another movie that was kind of self-aware in terms of being an homage to film itself. There's several references to movies that are out.
Yes.
And ongoing cinema culture.
Yeah, she's 36.
She's 36, so she's about the right age.
She's
all right.
Somewhere.
And what did you say? What else did you say she's been in?
She was in Brick and Brothers Bloom.
Yeah, okay. I really liked Brick.
Brothers Bloom was okay. But
Joey Gordy Levi's in Brick. And Brothers Bloom, not so much.
Yeah.
There were some funny parts.
But it was nothing special.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I like it. Sean?
Well, I give you a tepid response to your pick for the last recast because I picked Michelle Williams for
this. You picked Michelle Williams for this?
Yes.
Nuh-uh.
Because look at the photo. That's Mia Farrow looking
back at you. Yeah, it is.
I picked her because she's beautiful. She's damaged goods, and Mia Farrow is damaged goods in this movie. There's a lot of
emotional baggage.
And you know this. You know, we've talked about this before. A lot of these movies from the 70s. It's like strange casting with Guy Woodhouse being 39 at the time, and her character's 23, 24 at the time. Huge gaps, and I was like, I'm going to close the gap. So I made my casting a little older intentionally as well. Even though she's supposed to be, you know, childbearing as one of the central plot points, I still think that's, you know, 37 is not too old, and
I think
she's fine. So yeah, I made that pick, and that's why I gave you a tepid response. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I thought you really just didn't like Michelle Williams.
No,
I was like,
her.
Who doesn't like Destiny's Child?
That's where I was, but okay.
Sure. All right. So
next.
Next.
Marco goes.
Yeah. Give us your Rosemary.
All right.
Your Rosemary Woodhouse.
Rosemary Woodhouse.
Also, I just can't hear that last name without thinking about the show Archer. The manservant Woodhouse. Yes. He makes the eggs Woodhouse, and he just thinks they're called eggs, but it actually has like saffron and beluga caviar on it and stuff.
I may have actually chosen the wrong actress here, but that's the old lady that was kind of behind the
scenes. No. The old lady behind the scenes was Ruth Gordon playing Minnie Castavet, the neighbor.
Okay.
Mia Farrow played Rosemary Woodhouse, the main character.
I thought that's what we just did.
Oh, so you've already done yours. So he's done her.
Yeah,
done,
I was done the lead off. Next.
Yeah, I went first.
Okay,
who do you want us to go with next?
Yeah.
We're going to go with John Cassavetes or Guy Woodhouse from the film Rosemary's Baby. He was a Greek American actor. He was also an influential independent filmmaker.
He did
a lot of independent films. In the movie, his character is a movie producer, right? And so he gets his big break because somebody else goes blind.
He's an actor.
He's not a producer. Okay, so he gets his big break because somebody else goes blind. He also comes from an acting family. His mother was an actor, and his three children are actors. Nick, Zoe, and Alexandra Cassavetes. Zoe directed a movie called Broken English with Parker Posey in 2007. The first guy that I thought of when I looked at him was a guy named Alex Karpovsky. Alex Karpovsky plays Ray on the TV show Girls. If you've seen the TV show Girls, he is he's kind of always the guy who gets friend zoned. He has a romantic interest in a couple of the girls in the show. He's a pretty good actor. He plays Ray on Girls. He's 43 now. I think I should probably just pull up a picture of him so you guys can see the resemblance. And so that is Alex.
So he's mainly only been in Girls?
Well, he's got a new show coming on Comedy Central.
Okay.
Oh, he was also in Inside Llewyn Davis with Oscar Isaacs.
I really loved that movie.
Oh, it's good.
The music was great. Okay, yeah. That guy.
I dig it. Yep.
Yeah. So he was in Girls. He was in Inside Llewyn Davis. He's in Hail Caesar. And he's also in Tiny Furniture, Lena Dunham's first movie.
Mm-hmm.
All right, who wants to go next?
I can.
Guy Woodhouse.
Guy Woodhouse was a jerk.
Yeah, he was.
And
very kind of domineering, misogyny.
Oh, God. Like when she got her haircut. That's the worst decision you've made in your entire life.
Yeah. I love you. I just don't love that haircut.
Oh, what an asshole.
Yeah,
so he was a jerk. With that in mind, I went with an actor who can play that part. He has been in The Mindy Project. He played Ted Kaczynski's brother in the Unabomber TV series.
The new one, right?
Manhunt, yes. Okay. And you will probably most know him from The League as Pete Eckhart. It's Mark Duplass.
Okay, Mark Duplass. I love
him. Yeah, he's kind of a smarmy guy.
And he can do horror movies. He was in a movie not too long ago called Creep.
Yeah.
That was scary as fuck. It's one of the best kind of found footage style handycam looking horror movies
that I read about last night.
It's good. It's really good.
That's cool.
There's some scenes involving a wolf mask that are just unnerving.
Okay.
Okay, I like this. I like it a lot. Nice. What do you got?
I chose someone that has been in Problem Catch Fire. He's in the Fargo TV series. I chose Scoot McNair.
Scoot McNair!
A little bit like it, I think.
Yeah, he's good.
Yep, he fits it.
He's kind of a chameleon also. Like, he always looks a little bit different. He's been very selective about the roles that he takes. Mm-hmm. I think probably the biggest regret he has is being in Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, where he plays the Flash, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. We'll be in the Flash again, right?
So, yeah, he will.
Okay.
And that might be something for the corrections department, but I know he's in Batman versus Superman.
He's
like future Flash in the scene where Batman or Bruce Wayne is.
He's kind of really Flash.
Well, okay. Yes.
yeah.
So, all right, I can see Scoot McNair in that. He's really popular right now. He can just about get whatever he wants, which is why he's able to be so selective.
Height of his powers.
He's at the height of his powers!
Right.
All right, I love it. So that gives us one more role that we need to recast, and that is the role of Minnie Castavet, the kind of meddling neighbor. She's an older Jewish woman. It's very much a part of her character. I went with... Or do you guys want to go?
Go ahead.
I went with Barbara Streisand, Babs.
Thought about her.
Babs. She's 75 now. She obviously can act as well as sing. She is a very much a a Jewish lady presence, you know, and I think that she would be good as the role of Minnie Castavet in Rosemary's Baby. Ruth Gordon, very accomplished actress. Ooh. So she was already 72 in 1968 and had been working for like 50 years at that point. Yeah. She's really, really popular.
She won an Academy Award.
Yes.
I think. And Harold and Maude.
Is she from Harold and Maude?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So yeah, that was my pick for Minnie Castavet, Barbara Streisand. Marco, who you got?
Okay, so I did not play up the Jewish aspect quite as much.
That's fine. You don't have to.
Oh, good. Thanks. Appreciate that, guys. And then all of my notes just went away. Let's see. I chose, here we go, filling. Margot Martindale. She was in season 2 villain of Justified.
She is in Justified. She was one I of like her a lot.
The Americans.
Yeah.
She can play an intimidating heavy.
She's the assistant coach in that Sam Rockwell movie, The Winning Season.
The Winning Season. Okay, yeah. I just thought she did a great job being kind of a menacing presence, you know, and most things I've seen her.
There was another woman in the coven in Rosemary's Baby who looked even more like
the one with the glasses.
The one with the glasses.
Was rocking the cradle too fast.
Yes. The woman who was collecting Rosemary's breast milk just to throw it away.
Just
going to throw it away. Okay, I can see it though. She's a very versatile character actor. She's done a lot of TV, but also some films, and yeah, she would be really good in there too. So that is the conclusion. Nope. Sean's got something.
Gotta go.
I'm glad it wasn't just me. That's nice.
Okay, sorry. You haven't done yours. My bad.
It's fine. No, it's cool. I picked somebody you may not have ever heard of. Her name's Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin.
Bone.
Yeah.
I think that you know, character actress.
The biggest thing she's done recently was a movie called Grandma.
Well, she's in a TV series now.
What is it?
It's called Grace and Frankie.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And but yeah, I'm you know, a huge fan of hers for years and years growing up, and you know, 9 to 5 being one of her big breakout roles. But of course, she was on Laugh-In back in the 60s and early 70s,
sitting in a giant chair.
That was Edith Ann. She did that on Sesame Street.
Okay, and, gotcha.
So yeah, she's funny as hell, and you know, for anybody who hasn't seen Rosemary's Baby, that's just the reason they played that character up so comically is because it's just the big switcheroo at the end. It's like, oh shit, this woman's evil.
Very much so.
The most evil.
Okay, so now we are actually done recasting the second film, which will bring us to our final segment tonight. Normally we would do a wild card here, but I apparently dropped the ball and discussed with Andrew earlier in the week that we should do a spare parts instead of a wild card. Then I forgot about saying that. And but the spare parts that we're going to do is about The Omen, specifically the original 1976 version, which holds up very well. And also the 2006 remake of The Omen starring Liev Schreiber. So we also wanted to mention that when they released the remake, they released it on the 6th minute of the 6th hour of the 6th day of the 6th month of the year 2006, right?
Julia Stiles
is the other lead in the remake of The Omen. And then the kid, who played the kid in the remake?
In the remake?
Yes.
I'll look it up.
Because there's been a lot of criticism of the remake that it was
an unnecessary
remake, and that it was also incredibly miscast. Which, how do you recast Gregory Peck and the original kid from the original Omen, who was just incredible, Harvey Stevens? Okay, so in the remake, his name is Seamus Davy Fitzpatrick. I didn't know that's how you spelled Seamus.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick, and he looks kind of scary. That's what he looked like in The Omen. So he's a little bit older now, about 11 years older.
Some would say.
So yeah, one of the things about the original that made it such a powerful movie is the kid.
That
right?
kid was just fucking scary.
Yeah, so I guess at this point I should probably admit that even though I own it on DVD, I haven't actually watched The Omen, the original from 1976. That should probably go in the confession corner as well. But I'm still recognize its iconic status and can talk about how you could, if you should, and how you would make a remake better than they did. I think that's kind of what we go for in the spare parts segment. So the original has a really good rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's upper 80s. And then the remake has a 22%, which is super low. Mm. And like I said, the reason that its critical consensus was so low is that it was, a misguided remake, a unnecessary remake, and a miscast remake. So, conceding that the movie gets remade, right? Conceding that the movie gets remade, how do you make it better? Liev Schreiber is a good actor. Mm-hmm. Is he Gregory Peck level good actor?
I don't think so.
He's
always pretty much playing himself.
So, who could you actually get that was that iconic of an actor? I've got one guy coming to mind right now who's just like amazing in everything, and that's Daniel Day-Lewis.
You could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he would have to, you know,
he would have to
get heavily embedded in the occult.
You'd actually make a deal with the devil,
right?
In some way, yes.
So the little kid, you'd really have to go with somebody who's shown amazing acting ability. And I'm thinking Jacob Tremblay, who was the little kid in The Room. Mm. Not The Room, Room. Sorry. The little kid in Room.
There are children in that movie. Yeah.
Oh, hi, Damien. he was in Room with Brie Larson. That's not the first time I've made that mistake. He would be good. And then instead of Lee Remick playing Catherine Thorne, who could we get in there? Who could we recast for the role of Catherine Thorne besides the lady who's not Kirsten Dunst?
The lady who's not Kirsten Dunst.
Basically, who looks like that? Because I haven't seen The Omen maybe ever.
I haven't seen it either, but Lee Remick. Mm-hmm. Lee Remick is her name.
But you could do a... to Kirsten Dunst.
Whoa, I think you might be onto something there. I like it. Kirsten Dunst was just in The Beguiled, the Sofia Coppola movie, which I'm really high on. I watched it and it was just blown away. I also had not seen the original, the Clint Eastwood original, so I didn't know the twist.
Oh.
So that was really fun. And she's been pretty good lately. Like, she hasn't made a ton of movies, Kirsten Dunst, recently, but the ones that she has made have been really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we basically just did a recast of the remake of The Omen. What else could we do to maybe change it up enough that it would be appealing to younger audiences?
Found footage.
Oh, we could make
suggestion.
We could make instead of it being like a devil, it could be like
an angel that's being born?
No. Instead of it being like a demonic, like supernatural, satanic situation, what if we went with something that's actually scary to people now? Because, you know, like we were saying earlier, in the 70s, Satan was real and it was the scariest thing you could make a movie about, right?
Right.
So what's the scariest thing you could make a movie about right now?
Baby Trump.
Trump. Baby Trump is has the omen. So it's all about young Trump. And he's going around, he's having the best omens, everybody tells him.
Everyone knows it.
The best Antichrist. You've never seen such an Antichrist.
Right? So we could go with like a satirical comedic version that's like a political farce. And call it the bad omen, the baby Trump omen, the Damien Trump. No, something like that. I don't know, what else? Any other suggestions, guys? What else could we do to this?
Ways of reimagining The Omen.
Animated. Animated omen?
That wouldn't really improve it for the way they told the story.
The Animomen?
Yes, the anime version.
Right?
Sounds great, yeah.
Kind of like the Animatrix.
An anime version would be kind of cool.
Especially if they did it like the Animatrix, where if they broke it into segments and each segment was a different animator.
I could buy that.
Yeah.
Or a mumblecore version of the Omen.
Oh, good. It's just good.
Everyone not really enunciating their words. It'd be great.
Shrine of the Devil.
It's a devil.
So, I think we've beat that dead horse enough.
yeah.
So, it was Halloween.
So we are going to go ahead and wrap up the spare parts, and we are going to thank the guests. Today, we want to thank Marco of the Beast,
Yay.
Recently married man. I hounded him enough the past few days that he decided to come back on the show. And some real good positive reinforcement there, man. I love it.
By one day weekend.
Yeah, and so is there anything that you want to plug on the show today?
I'll plug getting moved to the day shift. I'm excited about that.
Getting the day shift.
Yeah, don't work the second shift, guys. Any longer than you have to.
Totally messes up your circadian.
Well, it's just you're not around people ever at all. You're just by yourself entirely.
And once again, thank you for coming back on the show. I hope to have you on here many more times. And also welcoming back and thanking again Sean of the Dead, the brew boss himself, for being back on the show. Anything you want to plug?
No. Seminarbrewing.com.
Seminarbrewing.com and not Schmaltz.
Schmaltz about our reviews.
We also want to plug the podcast itself. Please remember to rate and review us on iTunes if you like what you heard.
Or if you don't like what you heard.
Or even if you don't, give us a bad review. That's still a review. And subscribe. Give us a subscription to the show there. Those numbers count. And you can tweet at us on Twitter at Cinema Chop Shop. We are on Facebook at Cinema Chop Shop. Facebook.com/CinemaChopShop. And then CinemaChopShop@gmail.com. We've also got some sweet new business cards in the works, right?
Yes,
we're going to
be
handing those out at podcast trade shows.
Podcasts.
Yeah. So we also want to thank the engineer, Andrew Tay, the Canadian in your brain again. He's always doing the good work and accommodating all of this bullshit. So unless there's anything else, we just want to say thank you to you, the listeners, the Cinema Chop Shoppers, and please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.